because we got a very late start and we went a little bit over time on the Navi. So I'm going to go straight to the end and go straight till 12 o'clock. And we'll talk about a couple of halachas and some minhag. I want to spend a lot of time on one particular minhag, the minhag of kaparos. Anyone here shlo kaparos yet? Anyone here b'shita? B'shita will refuse to shlo kaparos with chicken? Anyone scared of shlo kaparos? Okay, so we'll talk about that in a few moments. Let's first do some other halachas, and then we'll come to kaparis in a few moments. But let's discuss, we left off yesterday, some of the minhagim that we do during the Aseres Yimei Teshuvah. One of the minhagim is during this week not to eat pas palta. That's very painful for me, because I eat pas palta. I was once in the supermarket over here in Avenue M in the Chinese supermarket, and a guy from the outside sees me. None of your business when I'm and he runs into the supermarket to see what I'm buying. Excuse me? What's in your business what I'm buying? I have a weakness for Swiss fudge Stelladoro cookies. I have a weakness. What do you want from me? So I went and he saw that I had in my hand Stelladoro Swiss fudge cookies. And he looks at me and he says to me, oh, I see you're hopping around before the Aseres Yimei Teshuvah. And he runs out and he leaves. What a chutzpah. So indeed, during the Aseres Yimei Teshuvah, it says in Shulchan Aruch that a person, if he can, should be nizhar in not eating pas palta. Only to eat pas Yisrael. That would basically put the OU out of business for a week. Okay? No Entenmann's, no Stelladoro, no Pepperidge Farms, all the different products that the OU very proudly gives their hashgacha on is off limits. It's not a joke. It's Shulchan Aruch. It's off limits if it's available pas Yisrael. Today there's no excuse, not even for me. Even for me, there's no excuse because there's a mountain fruit and there's a pomegranate and there is a Glatmart and Moishes and it's stacked full, Baruch Hashem, there are bakeries all over the place, stacked full, Baruch Hashem, Chaste Hashem, full of products that are pas Yisrael, and therefore we're supposed to be machmir for a few precious days not to eat pas palter. Not to eat bread that was baked by a baker. And Chazal tell us the reason why we're not supposed to eat pas palter because it may lead to intermarriage. And that's why we have something called pas Yisrael. I remember once I was by an Ask OU seminar, and Rav Herschel Schechter was speaking, and he said that the OU, they were talking about pas palter, the OU's policy, all different things, and Rav Herschel Schechter said that we must be doing something wrong, because if in America the intermarriage rate is way over 70%, if not even higher, and the only reason why, and Chazal said that you're not allowed to eat, that the person should try to stay away from pas akum, you're not allowed to eat bread that was baked by a non-Jew privately in his private home, even though you're absolutely certain that it's kosher. There's no question to ask. There are no non-kosher ingredients in this bread. It's 100% kosher, but it was privately baked in his home. This is not for retail. It's not for sale. You're not allowed to eat because it will lead to intermarriage. And therefore, the best you should really have pas Yisrael, or at least the bread was not made for private consumption. It was meant to be sold in the market. Like that's what's called palta. Palta means a bakery shop, a baker that's sold for the masses. So then there's no concern that we'll come to intermarriage because it's a private setting. So you say we must be doing something wrong because if intermarriage rate in America is over 70%, maybe we should rethink our pas palta. That's what he said. Because Chazal were very concerned about intermarriage. And one of the takanas they made is pasakum. And pas palter is leniency in pasakum.
Because it's bread, because people need bread.
We have no choice. It used to be years ago there was no choice, but today, but basically what he was saying is that
really
is that pas Chazal said pas akum leads to intermarriage, but you know you have to survive. So we're lenient. If the bread was not baked privately but was baked commercially, then you can be lenient. It's a leniency in pas akum. And why is pas akum aser? Intermarriage. But look, it's not working. It's not working. In America, there's intermarriage. So maybe time has come when we should be machmir, and we should not even eat pas palter.
But that chum is not going to apply to the people who intermarried.
Right. Well, at least will save the people who have not yet intermarried. It'll be. We don't know how these things work.
Our crowd.
That's so even one person. To even save one person. What?
What's the percentage of intermarriage in our?
It happens. Achmana Litzlan, it happens. You know, we don't know. So it's a very interesting comment that he made. And the only reason why traditionally we've been very, very lenient regarding pas palter is because, were you going to starve? There was nothing else to eat. Even when we grew up, not so long ago. There were very few products available. How many products? Pesach. There was nothing Pesach.
What stops a woman? I mean, easy for me to say, but what stops a woman from making bread?
Not everyone has the time, though. No. People work. They have another thing to eat. A lot of, but not everyone has the time and the patience.
But today,
there's no doubt about it. Is that today the number of products out there is really off the charts? The kosher products. It's overwhelming. They have. What do they have? They have in the Javits Center. They have a kosher. What's it called?
Expo.
It's not real. Read up on it. What's available today? And a lot of people will tell you that the kosher products are far superior than the non-kosher products. I mean, than the pas palter products, which have preservatives and other chemicals. So it's very interesting phenomenon what we have today. Likewise, Cholov Yisrael, Cholov Stam, Cholov Yisrael. Also, there are a lot of very interesting different issues that have changed today in this whole entire thing. But in any event, it says in Shulchan that at least during the days of Aseres Yimei Teshuvah, a person should do his best to be machmir and not eat pas palter. Okay, now we mentioned the word Aseres Yimei Teshuvah. Shabbos is coming around very soon. Today's already Thursday. It's hard to believe it's already Thursday today. And Shabbos is called Shabbos. Is it called Shabbos Shuva, or is it called Shabbos Teshuva? So there are different customs. Most of us call it Shabbos Shuva with a shin. Why? The Haftarah. The Haftarah is Shuva Yisrael Ad Hashem Elokecha Ki Chashalta Bavanecha. It's a play on the word of the Haftarah, the opening words of the Haftarah. However, many Hasidim, they like to call it Shabbos Teshuva, with a tough, not with a shem, because the goal is to do Teshuva. Focus on what's practical, not what Hoshea told you to do, but be practical. Actually, you should actually do the Teshuva. Don't just listen to what it says in the Haftarah and hear someone give a speech. Shuva Yisrael, do Teshuva. So they like to call it, this week is Shabbos Teshuva, a week, a Shabbos to focus on doing Teshuva for real. What Haftarah do we learn? This is the Haftarah. This week is very unique. There are three Sefarim that we learn in the Haftarah. There's a whole big debate in the order. Okay, what is the order? Let me take out a Chumash, just to discuss very briefly. I imagine most of us have in shuls where you read the Haftarah from a Chumash. So if you read the Haftarah from Chumash, what is the order? What is the correct order to read the Haftarah? It's very confusing, and in every shul, many shuls, they have different customs. Okay, here is the Art Scroll Chumash. This became almost a standard in many shuls. In this Chumash, it begins with Hosea, Shuva Yisrael, and then we continue in this Chumash, it goes to Yoel, correct, Yoel, and then it goes backwards to Micha, Mikel Kamoicha.
Micha is after Yoel, okay, you have to put
No, you're right. I made a mistake. I'm right. Art school already changed it. They already changed it. Correct. They already changed the order. We start with Shuva Yisrael, and then they go to Yoel, V'Hashem Nosan Koiloi, and then they conclude with Mikel Kamoicha. Now, what's the problem? Now, that's the way we have it over here in this Chumash. In many other Chumashim, a lot of the old Chumashim, it was not in this order. It was Shuva Yisrael, and then they read from Mikel Kamoicha, they read from Micha, and then they went backwards to Yoya. This was a very, very common way of doing the Haftarah. Let me see if we have over here another Chumash, an older Chumash. Shamshon of all her Chumash. It's not a riot. Can you remember this Chumash? Okay, remember this Chumash? The Old Testament. Okay, the Old Testament. Okay, this already is new compared to what they used to have. And in this Chumash, Parshas Vayelech, okay, they have, like I told you, they have a Shuvah. They have it Shuva Yisrael first, and then they go to. They don't even have Micha in this Chumash. They go to Yoel. No, they do have. Like I told you, they have here in this Chumash. First is Hosea, then is Micha, and then they go backwards to Yoel. Okay, see the old Chumash. All of the old Chumashim, B'li Yoytzim in Aklal. Our school, I think, was the first one to break the rules. All of the old Chumashim, what are you doing? You taking pictures? Mm-hmm. Don't take pictures. Don't send in any pictures, please. Don't. What is this Chumash? It starts with Hosea. It then goes to Yoel. It goes to Micha. And you go backwards. We're learning Treyasa. We know that the order of the Treyasa, Micha comes after Yoel. Why is that a problem? Because it says Beferish in the Gemara Masechta Megillah that you're not allowed to go backwards. When you read from the Nevi'im, you're not allowed to go backwards. So how in the world are we allowed to go backwards? So there's a lot of Torah on this. I remember last year we discussed some of this, and many want to say is that. When we're reading Yoel, we're not really going backwards. We're not reading it as a din of the Haftarah. We're just reading it. I don't remember all the details. Because you're not really allowed to go backwards. It's a problem. But yeah, that's the way it was done for generations. That's the way it was always done. For some reason, the Art Scroll, they broke the rules. And they rearranged it in order to fulfill what it says in the Gemara, that you have to go in order. Someone told me recently, what do you do when you have parchment? You have klaf. Mm-hmm. So someone has said that if you're reading it from a chumash, it doesn't make any difference. There's no big deal. There's no reason why you cannot go backwards. There's no harm going backwards. But when you lane from parchment, from klaf, that's where the halacha applies, that you're not allowed to go backwards. Being that for many, many years, it was very rare for a shul to lane the haftarah from parchment. They lane it from a chumash. That's why you have it over here in this particular order. Now that today became very popular in many shuls to lane it from parchment, so now that's why the article printed it in the reverse order. Now what's interesting though is someone told me for a fact that in Chaim Berlin, Not that I've been davening in many years in Shabbos, but in Chaim Berlin, they always leaned for many, many years, like in many yeshivas in parchment. And all the years, they would read the Haftarah from parchment backwards. All the years. They would lean first from Treyasar, from Hosea, and then they would fast forward to Micha, Mikel Kamocha, and then they would go backwards to Yoel. This was done in Chaim Berlin probably at least for 50 years from parchment. For some reason, about 3-4 years ago, the Baal Kri himself told this to me, a discussion broke out, and it resulted after a long give and take between different Rabbonim and Poiskim and people who are knowledgeable in this matter, the decision was made to change the minhag. You familiar with this? The decision was made to change the minhag, and for the last 3-4 years in Chaim Berlin, when they read from parchment, they go in order. The order that you'll see in the art scroll printed version. New thing. Chadoshim labakarim, rabba emuna secha. When new things come about, you have to have a lot of faith. So it's a very interesting phenomenon. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that the whole thing is a big mistake. And he says that you're only supposed to lane 2, not 3. In other words, we're learning over from 3 books. Why are we learning from 3 books? Well, he says it all depends on the year. If you lane, I should have prepared this. I didn't know that something we want to talk about. But if you lane, some years, Shabbos Shuvah is a combination of Nitzavim Vayelech. And some years, we break it up. Like this year, Nitzavim, and then we lane Vayelech. So Rav Moshe says what was originally intended was, if you lane Nitzav Vayelech, then you would lane Shuva Yisrael and Mikel Kamoicha. But if you're laning only Vayelech and not Nitzavim, then I don't remember the details exactly. I have to go look back into it. But basically, he said that this became a mishmash because there's a different order, there's a different things that are read depending on if you lane the 2 parashios together or they're lane separately. And somehow by mistake, it was all grouped together, and that's why we got all confused. And the end is we lane all 3 together every single year, whether we like it or not. But because it was never intended that we should lane all 3, it was originally intended that there should be a difference if you lane Nitzav Vayelech together or you lane Nitzav Vayelech separate. That's how it came about that these 3 all got grouped together in the wrong order and all of this confusion resulted. Yeah. When Yom Kippur is on Shabbos, then the Shabbos before is Hazinu.
Yes,
so when you lane Hazinu and not Vayelech, so then it's going to be a different. That's what it depends upon. It can happen one of 3 ways. Is that really what it's about? You can lane Nitzav Vayelech together, or you can just lane Vayelech like this year, or you can lane Hazinu. So there are 3 candidates for Shabbos Shuvah. Now the Haftorah, in addition to being Minyan D'Yoma of doing Teshuvah, it also relates slightly to the Parashas HaShavua. So being that there are 3 candidates of what you're going to lane, which Parashah you're going to lane, are you going to lane Nitzav Vayelech together? Are you going to lane only Vayelech? Are you going to lane Hazinu? That has an effect on what is the correct Haftorah. Now, the Haftorah must include, of course, Hoshea, we'll read the Psukim Shuva Yisrael. But what about the other 2 segments? That could depend. And it was always meant you should only lane 2, not 3. Being that we got confused and we printed it all together, the result was all 3 are printed together in the wrong order, and we make a mistake and we lane all 3 in the wrong order, and that was never the intent. That's how it came about. So today, Rav Moshe says you only should lane 2, not 3. He has a whole cheshbon exactly the double meravava. Could be the Mishnah Berurah also quotes in the Ber Halacha. Okay, this is just some of the interesting issues just to be aware of, that when you go to shul on Shabbos and they're going to lane the Haftorah, I've seen this in the Young Israel, there was always confusion. I down in the Young Israel many, many years ago, because they have there the Haftorah book. And I think in the Haftorah book, they do put it in a different order than what was common in the printed Chumash. It could be in the Haftorah book, it was in the order, the correct order, going forward. And everyone in shul had the old Chumashim where it was printed out of order. And the one that would read the Haftorah from the Haftorah book, people started correcting him every single year. What are you saying? You're not saying it in the correct order. And he would point, he is saying it in the correct order. And that was because he was reading it from the Haftarah book, which had it in a different order, and people were listening from a Chumash, which had a different order. So it became, it always was a confusing matter. And it's still confusing because people today have different Chumashim, and there are different traditions of exactly what to do in shul. Are you allowed to go backwards? Are you not allowed to go backwards? And there's a long list of why it's not considered to be a violation of the halacha if you do need to go backwards. Okay, let's put that aside for now. Let's now discuss something for the last couple of minutes. Let's discuss the minhag Yisrael of doing kaparis. Kaparis is probably one of the most controversial minhagim in the history of Klal Yisrael. That is what we see advertised all over the place now, to take a chicken and swirl it around your head a couple of times and say the psukim that this chicken will go in place of me, lemisa, and I in exchange will go l'chayim. What is this minhag all about? When did it start? Is it proper? Is this darkei chayim moiri? Where does all of this come from? And the truth is, this minhag is a very, very ancient minhag. It appears to have started, or it's at least certainly rooted from the time of the Geonim. And the Geonim lived long, long time ago, over 1,000 years ago, a little bit more than 1,000 years ago, the period of the Geonim. Many of the Geonim quote the minhag in various forms, and there's no question about it that it is a legitimate minhag. And just about the vast majority of the Rishonim, Achronim, the Bali Mesoira on the Minhage Yisrael cite this minhag pretty much exactly the way that we do it, and there's no question about it that it is accepted and it is done, including the Maril. The Maril is the father of all Minhagim. He quotes the minhag. Almost all of the Rishonim quote the minhag. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch mentions that a person should do kaparos, v'chulu v'chulu. Who are the ones that say that it should not be done? Probably the greatest opponent to the minhag of kaparos was the Rashba. The Rashba and the Ramban, Kesfardin, from Spain. They were the greatest opponents of the minhag of it. They write against it, and they write it's darkei hoemoiri. It's a non-Jewish thing to take a bird and to swirl it around your head and to say that this bird should go in my place and I will go l'chayim. They were very much against it, and to the point where the Sfardim, those from Spain, don't make any mention of it. For example, the Rif and the Rambam make no mention of the minhag of kaparis, which is a very significant statement. The Beis Yosef, being that he follows the majority between the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh, does not mention, in fact he does mention, and this is something which is a very, very famous controversy, the words of the Shulchan Aruch Arsat. If you open up today a new Shulchan Aruch, you go to Simen, Tof Reish Hei, and Aruch Chaim, you will read from the Mechaber, the Beis Yosef. Again, the Beis Yosef always follows pretty much the Rambam and the Rif, the majority of the Rosh, the Rif, and the Rambam. The words that you will see that appear today in the Shulchan Aruch are Ma Shenohagu La'asois Kapora the Erev Yom HaKippurim Lishchait, this that we, the custom is to do a Kapora, an atonement, Erev Yom HaKippurim Lishchait, to slaughter a tarnagol, a male rooster, a male bird, I'll call Ben Zohar, for every male child, V'loimar Olav Pesukim, and to recite Pesukim as you do this procedure, Yesh Limnoiha Hamina. You should stop it. You should withhold yourself from doing, refrain from doing this custom. This is what it says in today's Shulchan Aruch, in the Mechaber, from the Mechaber. That's what it says in the beginning of 7 Tov Reish Hey. Okay, in the Pri Chodosh as well writes, Mikol Mokam, the Prichadosh, one of the commentators on Shulchan Aruch, he writes, Mikol Mokam, Ein Sofik, there is no doubt, Sheroy, it's fitting, Levatel HaMinog, to cancel this custom, Mishum Chashash, Darkei Hoemari. This is superstition. It's superstition to do something like this and take a burden to think in your mind that this bird's going to die instead of me. Sorry. It's nonsense. It's dark, it's an issur d'oraisa. In fact, it's an avera. You're not allowed to do something which the goyim do. It's a sin to do this. Uchsev, it says in the Torah, tamim tihyeh im Hashem Elokech. However, the Ramah writes, no, the custom is that we do it. The custom is that we do it. And I have over here a list, a whole page, list literally, mamash, a whole page of Rishonim, Achronim, Balei Mesora, Goinim, a list like you can't even imagine of commentators and poskim that tell us, yes, you should do it. This is legitimate. Do not worry, even though the Rambam did not mention it, even though the Ramban was against it, even though the Rashi was very against it, and the Prichadosh, it's okay, don't worry, you'll do it, nothing's going to happen to you, you're not in the violation of Halacha, it's A-okay. Now this obviously was very, very controversial. Let me first read with the Ramah. After the Mechaber says, don't, you should, yesh limnoya, in our Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah writes, ubo avigiki noihagin, bekaporois, b'chol medinois elu, it is our custom to do this custom in all of our communities. Ve'en l'shanos, don't change. If you've been doing it, don't consider listening to what the Mechaber, the Beis Yosef writes, don't change. Ki hu minhog vosikin, it's an ancient custom. So the Ramah writes, I've read what the Mechaber said, that yesh limnoya milinhoig, you should refrain from doing this custom. I'm telling you, business as usual. Keep on doing the custom. Normally, Sfardim follow what it says in the Mechaber, and Ashkenazim follow what it says in the Ramah. This appears to be a notable exception that the vast majority of Sfardim also do kaparis, at least with money. A vast majority of Sfardim do, there's no little difference, what's with money, it's all the same. The vast majority of Sfardim do not listen to the Beis Yosef. He told them, don't do it, yesh lumnoya, puk chazima amadvar, go out and see what's going on in the world, go into the various minhagim of the Sfardish communities, they all seem, the vast majority. The only ones that do not do it are the Teimonim. The Teimonim have absolutely no tradition to do this. There are other some pockets of Jews. In fact, there are some Ashkenazim. Amsterdam. Anyone that comes from Amsterdam. Who comes from Amsterdam? Which Kehilas come from Amsterdam? I'm not sure. But in Amsterdam, there was a big hakpada not to do it. So there are Ashkenazim who do not do it. And there are many Sfardim who do it. So it's not a raya what it says.
But Amsterdam also has a large Sfardic community.
And they don't do it. Okay? There, anyone that comes from Amsterdam did not do it. That's what it says over here. So it's a big mishmash. Who does? Who does not? We don't. It's not like the normal rules of the Sfardim, the Beis Yosef. Now this is very, very interesting. It's very controversial. In one of the oldest printings of the Shulchan Aruch, if you go online and you could find when was the Shulchan Aruch first printed, in one year. I don't know, but it was a very, very long time ago, like 250 years ago, more even? 400 years ago? Yeah? Okay, 400 years ago, I don't know how to count. V'chein b'shulchan aruch shenitfas b'chai ha-mechaber. In the edition of the Shulchan Aruch that was printed in the lifetime of the Beis Yosef, we have it today. B'roish ha-simin, on the top of the simin, Hayakosov Sham, it says over there, Minug Hakaporois Be'erev Yoim Hakipurim Minug Shel Shtusu. Okay? So our Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that. Our Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber writes, Yesh Limnoya Hamin. Very delicate, very very diplomatic.
Is that censorship?
In the Shulchan Aruch that we have today in our hands, printed in the lifetime of the Mechaber, it says there, minug, the beginning of the siman, minug kaparis ber mikipur, minug shel shtusu. Now, then it goes, in the second edition, okay, now that Shulchan Aruch, by the way, did not have the Ramah. The Ramah did not yet comment on the Shulchan Aruch until much later on. When the Mechaber wrote the Shulchan Aruch, it was only for the Sfardim. And then there was a complaint that the Ramos complaint was that it's not fair. You're writing a Shulchan Aruch only for the Sfardim. That's not the meaning of the Ashkenazim. So he was instead of writing his own Shulchan Aruch, it's very very wise. This is a brilliant thing which has been the topic of discussion for many many people of what the Ramos did. If the Ramos was living today, there's no doubt that if someone would write a book for the Sfardim, so you would come out and write a book for the Ashkenazim. You would censor, and you would just ignore what the Sfardim, their book for the Sfardim. And this is the book for the Ashkenazim. Look at Artscroll. They just published now the Artscroll Siddur for the Sfardim. What took 30 years? It's over 30 years. Artscroll put out 30 years ago, they put out the Artscroll Siddur for the Ashkenazim. Where were the Sfardim then? It wasn't for them. No one picked up that. No one picked up the article Siddur because it's not their nusach. And now they put out this magnificent masterpiece, the article Siddur for the Sfardim. Everything is different. Everything. The way even they translate the words, the transliterations, like you can't even begin to fathom how many differences there are in every little thing that you take for granted. The Sfardim have a whole different way of looking at the Siddur. It's not real. To go page by page, word by word, letter by letter, you will be shocked at how many differences there are between the tradition of the Sfardim versus the tradition of the Ashkenazim. Yet, what did the Ramah do? He didn't go make a new Sefer. He took the Shulchan Aruch of the Sfardim, and he just wrote his comments. Ashkenazim, we do this. Ashkenazim, we do this. He did not make his own Shulchan Aruch. He just commented on the words of the Mechaber. It's an incredible insight into human psychology and into humility and an approach to learning halacha, not to make your own Shulchan Aruch, but yet to use as the foundation what was already done and just build upon it by adding hagois to the words of the Mechaber.
That the Ashkenazic community, since everything says we have this minhag, we have this minhag, was very big opposition to write it as Shulchan Aruch. And he made the comments.
Right, the Ramah only made comments, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
There was against writing of a standard halakha.
Question is, why not? Well, the Mechaber did it. He did it for the Sfardim, so why not for the Ashkenazim? Okay, that's the whole time. That's the whole discussion. But yet, in the second edition of the Shulchan Aruch, where already it began to appear the words of the Ramah, that edition, Kishetfisu as a Shulchan Aruch, because it's called in the Magoyis HaRamah, the Matfisim, the printers, they left out those words, Minug Shel Shtushu. They took out those words. So the question is, how did those words get there to begin with? Who put them there and who took them out? It's not known. The simple understanding is the Mechaber never wrote those words. The Beis Yosef never wrote those words. There was already hanky-panky politics going on already then when they printed the show. It was such a hot issue. Can you imagine how deep this issue went? Today we laugh at it. We don't appreciate how intense this issue was. It was such an intense issue that we assume that the printers, there was corruption in the printing press. That they were not satisfied with the Mechaber just saying Yesh Limnoya Milinhoig. That wasn't enough. Someone went into the printing press and added these words Minok Shel Shtushu. And it took a generation to undo that. By in the next edition, they took out those words. And there was a blame game going on. Who put them in to begin with? And the fact here that it's the year 2019, Limisbam, we're still talking about it, goes to show how deep this issue was. This minog of kaparis, where it crept this whole thing, which crept into the words of Shulchan Aruch itself.
The thing is, to say that you should refrain from doing it doesn't actually argue against the darkei aruch.
Exactly the point.
Just to say, well, we always did it, so it's
exactly
very lukewarm endorsement.
This minog obviously touched upon the lifeblood. We have over here the haftarah side. This minog obviously touched upon the lifeblood of Klal Yisrael. It was something that was so sensitive. It was a major, major controversy. The halacha l'maaseh. What exactly is the minog? So the earliest source of the minog comes from Talmud the Goyim, and there it's not exactly where we do it today. From the Goyim, it's mashma that they did it. There are different versions. And there's also a discussion, there's corruption, people were playing with the Girsois. But according to some of the versions, it appears that it was done. I'll give you all the different versions. Erev Rosh Hashanah, not Erev Yom Kippur. Another version has them doing it on Rosh Hashanah itself. You did Kaparis on Rosh Hashanah. That's halachically problematic because part of the procedure is to lean upon the bird. When you lean your weight upon the bird, you're not allowed to lean upon a bird on Yom Tov. The bird, first of all, is muksa, unless even if you're going to eat it, but you're not, even if you're not going to eat it, you're not allowed to be mishtamish, to use it on Yom Tov. So some will answer, you don't lean with all your weight, you just touch it. That you're allowed to do. Okay. The next minig is, like what we have today, is to do it on Erev Yom Kippur. Or another minig is between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Another minig is very, very interesting, is to do it twice. To do it on Rosh Hashanah and again Erev Yom Kippur. Another minig is the common man does it once on Erev Rosh Hashanah, but the Rabbonim and the Balei Batim, they do it twice. Erev Rosh Hashanah and Erev Yom Kippur. There's another minig to do it bedavka on Hoshana Rabbah. So look what's going on over here. You have over here more minhagim than there are people in this room. More people that are listening. Many, many, many minhagim. Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, do it twice. Hoshana Rabbah, only the Balabatim, the Rabbanim. What do you do it with? So what's common is do with a bird. Why a bird? Because a bird in Hebrew is a gever. Gever. And being that we want it to be an exchange for us, so we want to use a creature which has the same title as a human being. A person is a gever, and a bird is called a gever. That's what it says. Toiv la-gever. It's also called a bird. It's called a gever. So therefore, zeh tachazeh, we use a bird. Some have the tradition to use an animal that has horns, specifically an ayil, a ram, zecher for the Eloi Shel Yitzchak. In other words, after the Akedah, what happened? Basically, according to this understanding, Avraham Avinu did kaparis. After the Egel, after the Akedah, so vayisina vayavihine ayil, achar, Nechaz Basvach Bekarnov. Avraham picked up the ayil and he shechted it and he said, it says in the Medrash, when he said, Zeh Tachazeh, I really wanted to bring my child Yitzchak. I was unable to do so. So Zeh Tachazeh. So everything that I do to this ayil should be in place of what I would have done to Yitzchak. So when you do kaparos, what you're really doing is, you're just doing what Avraham Avinu did after the Akedah, and it's a way to remind ourselves and the Ribbono Shel Olam of the Akedah. So therefore, ideally, you should use an ayil, which has a horn, but being that not the common man can afford to buy an ayil, so you do what's common. It's cheap. Birds are always lying around the house, so use birds. But ideally, you should use animals, and indeed we find that the Rabbonim and the Balei Batim, they would use animals to really do it exactly the way Avraham Avinu did it.
That's kosher.
What?
That's kosher animal?
Yeah, yeah, because when you're supposed to shecht it, after you do kaparis, so you're supposed to shecht it, and you're supposed to give it to poor people to eat. Someone has said the whole purpose of doing the kaparis is basically what it says in the Gemara, this animal, this is litztaka, b'shvil sheyichye b'ni, harei zet tzadik gamur. In other words, you're triggering the words harei zeh tzadik gamur. When you go into the Yom HaDin, the Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Meisam Suchim, tzadikim nichtavim la'alta, the Rishama nichtavim rachmon l'stam, the other way around, the Binyanim are in the middle. In order to trigger the words harei zeh tzadik gamur, so what do? You take a bird, or you take an animal, and you give it as charity to a poor person, and you say, by me giving this to a poor person, bavur sheyichya bini, my child shall live. I'm taking this, you wrap it around your head, not that you're exchanging, this is going to be dedicated as charity money, so my child shall live. And what does the Gemara say if you do that? There's nothing wrong giving tzedakah for ulterior motives. Adrama, it's a good thing to give tzedakah for ulterior motives. Harei zeh tzadik gomor. It's a technique in order to trigger the words of harei zeh tzadik gomor. Doesn't a person want to be a tzadik gomor when you go into the Yom HaDin? So we're going to basically make those words come to life. How do you make those words come to life? You give tzedakah, bavur, sheyichya b'ni. And go and look at it and step back. What is ego kaparis? Is it for yourself or for your children? Most of the nuschois of kaparis are not for yourself. Most of the fine times when we find doing kaparis, you're not doing it for the adults. You're doing it for your children. You're doing it for your children. And therefore, you're basically triggering this concept, I want to give charity in order that my child shall live. Harei zeh tzadik gamur. Yeah?
But this is not the conventional way in which we give tzedakah.
Not today. In the modern world, who would want to go, who would even dare take today? Who knows what happens to these birds? Exactly.
Ritual, I think.
Minug avoseinu biyodeinu. You're absolutely correct. Today, this is not the way we give tzedakah. Today, to stay on your credit card, write a check, cash is always, cash is king. You're 100% correct, but minig avoseinu biodenu, it was nothing more than a charity technique to trigger the beautiful words of Chazal, harei zeh tzadik gamur. Others want to say the reason we do this is basically a soyer la zozel. That's what they're doing every Yom Kippurim. Others say it's some type of kapara, like pshuto kamashmoy, in case we satisfy the satan. The satan loves death. The malach hamavis, oh, he loves death. So here, you can have this chicken. You can have this chicken, leave me alone. All right, these are Kabbalistic inyanim. Some say it's similar to a carbon. And because it's so similar to a carbon, you bedafka have to use birds that are not eligible to be offered as karbonis. Some use for males, male birds, for females, female birds. Some of Makbidah should be bedafka white. Why white? I guess purity reminds you of Tara. Or they say the white ones were known to be healthy. Kasharim kashela yalbinu. So that's not. Now, can you use the same bird? Can you use the same bird for multiple people? The chatchila, no. Every person needs their own bird. No, today it's not possible. What?
Yeah.
So you can be megal. You can use one bird for many, many people. Okay. So how now? What about if you say you can't have a bird? Can you use a fish? Many had the custom to use fish, not birds. But if you use a fish, you're supposed to use a living fish. The fish is still alive. Because once the fish is already dead, it's too late. You're supposed to have a living fish. How do you have a living fish out of water? You figure it out, okay? Take the fish tank. You swing a fish tank, or fish don't die so fast, Rabbi Yisai. They don't die. It takes a long time after they come out of the water.
People
flapping around.
Their bathtubs, and the fish would be swimming.
Use fish. Another minig, an ancient minig, was to use plants. This was seems to be very popular. Minig is why? Because ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. They would plant special types of plants in Chodesh Av, after Tisha B'Av, and they would wait for it to grow to a certain degree, Erev Rosh Hashanah, and Erev Rosh Hashanah they would take it, they would pull it out of the ground, and they would swing it around their head, and they would throw it into the river. And basically, in case Chas Hashem was destined, we should die. Ki ha'odom eitz hasadeh, this should go in my place. So different, like, either use animals or use birds, or birds, a male bird for males, a female for females, fish or plants. And what do we do many today? We use money. Most of us, many people use money because, according to many opinions, like I told you, the ikatam was not that any Kabbalistic inyanim. It was just a technique of giving tzedakah. Especially to give tzedakah to trigger the words of the Gemara that if a person gives tzedakah, even if you give the tzedakah for ulterior motives, it's okay. Harei zeh tzadik gamur. A person wants to hear those words on Erev Rosh Hashanah, on Erev Yom Kippur. You want to hear the words that you are a tzadik gamur. Harei zeh tzadik gamur. So give the money and say.
It's
not you. The person. Ha'oimer. A person says, oil zeh. I'm bringing this carbon oil. I'm giving this tzedakah. B'shvil sheyichya b'ni. Harei zeh tzadik gamur. There was once a maaseh. Someone came to Rav Steinman. I read this in the book. An unbelievable story. Someone came to Rav Steinman and he said to Rav Steinman, you know, I have a problem. Problem is, I'm giving a lot of tzedakah for a cause. I'm trying to do it l'shem shemayim. I have to confess that I can't. At least 5% of me is doing this shaloi l'shem shamayim, for kavod, for whatever it is. I'm getting something in return. I cannot bring myself to give the tzedakah 100% l'shem shamayim. I'm giving it. There's a degree of shaloi l'shem shamayim. Rav Steinman said to him, halavai, halavai, you should give the tzedakah 100% shaloi l'shem shamayim. Because then you'll give a lot more. Okay? So pikeach. And he said it seriously also. You're coming, what kind of nonsense is this? You're coming, you're complaining about you're not giving l'shem shamayim? What kind of nonsense is this? Just give the money. Give the money for whatever. Halavai, it shouldn't be l'shem shemayim. You'll give a lot more. You'll do it a lot better. You know how many times people have organizations? The first rule, Gedoy Yisrael, give people who make chesed organizations. The first piece of advice you'll hear from every single person who's a pikeach is, make it a business. If you're going to make your chesed organization into a chesed organization, it'll shut down. You won't be in operation more than a few weeks. If you make your gemach into a business, you'll be around now, 100 years from now. It'll be a multi. You're doing something very good. You're providing a very great service. And if you have ulterior motive, it's a business, you'll be very matzliach. It's a very sad statement, but unfortunately, we live in a very. That's the world we live in. Look at the yeshivas today. The yeshivas today, it's a very sad thing that our private businesses are usually very successful. Someone really cares. They have a vested interest. And yeshivas that are a public trust, no one cleans the bathrooms. It's the last thing to be done. Is someone should care about cleaning the bathrooms. The yeshivas that are private institutions, their bathrooms are very clean, are very, very nice. And with that comes corruption, okay? It's a very sad, you know, it's a trade-off. It's a trade-off. There's corruption which comes with private institutions, but on the other hand, at least there's a yeshiva. At least you have a place to send your child to. All the other yeshivas, the rebbeim don't get paid. The rebbeim are not paid, so there's no yeshiva shuts down very quickly. you need a balance, right? You need a balance. Everything in life is about balance. So you want to trigger Harei Zeh Tzadik Gomor on Erev Yom Kippur. So you take a chicken and you say, this should be a kapara. This should be basically tzedakah. I'm going to shecht it. I'm going to give the bird to a poor person to have what to eat. B'shvil sheyichya b'ni. I'm doing it for ulterior motives. And you feel wonderful because Chazal respond and they say, oh, you've done a very big mitzvah. Harei zeh tzadik gomor. You want to hear those words Erev Yom Kippur because you want in Shemayim they should hear those words. So you should talk to a good year, a year of life. So halacha lemaisa, problem is when you these chickens that they do today, do they go litzdaka? I have no idea what goes on. Some of them do, some of them don't. There are a lot of different issues about shechita. Make sure it's a kosher shechita. There are no problems. And what happened to the birds? Some of them are in the garbage. Some of them are given to poor people. So people, well, the best thing to do is do both. You go, if you want to go do kaparis, but don't, that's not enough. You should also give a few dollars to tzedakah because you really do not know, even in all of these organizations that do these kaparis, if your chicken is going to really end up in the hand of a poor person with a kosher shechita. Unfortunately, a lot of these chickens that they do kaparis end up in the garden, which is also fine because part of kaparis is the soher la zozel element, that this should die and not me. But if you want to learn that the ikatam, the ikminig was that you should give tzedakah, so in addition to doing the kaparis, don't rely upon that for tzedakah, you give tzedakah as well. Have a wonderful day.